If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Before we get to today's show, I wanted to tell you all about the new SoundStream app. It is the new home for all things sound podcast, and now you're able to listen to the perfect blend of music you'd expect from us 24/7. Jam bands and more, much more. New episodes of the podcast arrive at least 3 times a week, and now you can listen to your favorite artists and bands all the time in a perfect music stream. Just hit the play button and away you go. You'll be boogieing in no time. You can make requests, offer shoutouts, and even let us know when your birthday is, all from the SoundStream app. Get the app at thesoundstream.com or in the Apple or Google Play Store. The show starts now.
From her home, though you never paid her no mind. Now fast forward, and the child is grown. Yes, she lays it all on the line. Growing strong just like a tree.
What's at your side?
Coming out to set you free.
What's at your side?
Growing strong just like a tree. Just tumble down, watch her walk away with your heart. Growing strong just like a tree.
What's at your side?
Coming out to set you free.
What's at your side?
Oh, rising or fall to see.
What's at your side?
Baby was a refugee.
What's at your side?
Papás nos explicaron que
You've been listening to Joan Osborne and What's That You Say from her forthcoming record, Trouble and Strife, due out September 18th. It's been 6 years since Joan Osborne put her record out of original material, but her new 10-song record absolutely makes up for the wait. Don't get me wrong, I absolutely love the Bob Dylan covers record and all the live playing she did to go along with it, plus her contributions to the first version of Trigger Hippie, but I think we can all agree that Joan has always had a very strong voice for socio-political advocacy in her writing, and it's something that's been missing from the landscape. By the way, I've known since we started this podcast back in 2016 that Joan was absolutely one of the people we wanted to have on the show because of her diverse and eclectic background and because she was such an integral part of the neo jam band scene in New York in the late 80s and early 90s. Basically, I'm an unabashed fan of the woman's voice, her body of work, and overall talent. So it was an absolute delight to sit down with her to talk about the new album and much more, including some of the things mentioned in this introduction. Our conversation started, though, when I asked what took so long for new Joan Osborne material.
Well, I think it's because we sort of did this really deep dive into the Dylan material and, you know, put out the record and then also did a bunch of touring behind it and did touring not only with, you know, myself and my band, but also we did these shows called Dylanology shows where we had guest artists come along like Jackie Greene or Robert Randolph or Amy Helm and join us and do these sort of big night long extravaganzas with a full band of Dylan covers. And, you know, it's just very engaging to be able to do that kind of thing with his material, because A, there's so much of it and it's of such high quality and there's so many, you know, different shades of meaning that you can explore, and so many of the songs, you know, even the ones that are written back in the 60s and 70s feel so fresh. And you just, as a writer myself, I felt like I was learning a lot about writing by covering his songs and by doing that sort of deep dive into his material. So I feel like it certainly wasn't, I feel like it was time well spent. And also, you know, I'm also a mom and I have, you know, parenting responsibilities and, you know, a house to take care of, whatever. So I don't spend as much time in the recording studio working on new material maybe as I would have when I was younger. You know, so life sometimes intervenes, but also I think the amount of time that we spent working on the Dylan stuff, it just was, you know, I could do another Dylan record tomorrow and dive right back into it and be very happy to do that.
I think I speak for everybody. We'd all be very happy if you did that again. but let's talk about Trouble and Strife, because we do want to talk about these 10 songs that you've written. I think there's two co-writes. So who was the co-writer and on what songs were the co-writes?
Well, one of the co-writes is for a song called Meat and Potatoes. And I wrote that with Nick Govrick while we were doing stuff together in a band called Trigger Hippie, which I'm no longer working with, but they're still, Trigger Hippie is still going on. You know, Nick just brought in this really cool, greasy groove to the writing sessions. And to me, it sort of called to mind, like, you know, James Brown singing, you know, neck bone, candied yams, red beans and rice, you know, and it just kind of, it felt like it needed to be a song like that. And so I, you know, ran off into another room and started writing the lyrics and throwing some melodies at it. And so that one came together in a matter of a couple of days in the Trigger Hippie writing sessions. And it was really, really fun. And I actually was sort of on the fence about whether I thought that song should go on this record because it was written in a sort of different place and time than the other tunes. But, you know, really, as I listened to it, you know, I put the songs together and listened to them in different orders and everything, and it just seemed to connect with the other material on the record. I guess maybe stylistically it's similar, and it just has the kind of a sensual vibe to it, which I think the rest of the record does as well. So it just seemed to work, and I didn't want to overthink it. So I was like, yep, put it on there. put it out.
Nick is a great songwriter. I don't think he gets enough credit for the work he does. Like Jono, like these are guys that toil and toil in songwriting and sort of toil in obscurity to a certain degree, and they don't get enough credit. We had Nick and Ed of the reformed or rebranded Trigger Hippie on a couple months ago when they released their new record. And
nice.
It was the first time I had a chance to talk to Nick, and really he is such a great writer. But now that I think about it, that tune does, it feels like a Trigger Hippie song with that groove, which is, you know, which I
think people, super sexy, greasy groove and feel.
I love it. Mm-hmm. And what was the other song that has a co-write?
The other song, I believe it's, is it What's That You Say?
Right, with Anna Maria.
Yeah, that's the one. And and I worked on that one in the studio as we were recording it with the studio band. So a couple of the guys in the band, Keith Cotton and Richard Hammond, came up with some of the chord passages and things like that, and you know, really kind of rebuilt the song structure in a way where I felt like, even though it wasn't lyrics and melody, it just, it really made the song so that they, you know, they definitely deserve to have writing credit on it as well. So
I think Anna Marie does too, right? I mean, she's so prominent in that song, and I don't speak Spanish, but I assume what you're doing off of her speaking parts is riffing off of what she's saying in Spanish. Is that?
Well, actually, her speaking parts were added after, as the very last thing, after everything else came together. You know, I wrote the song really sort of as a response to what I see as this very dismaying, you know, dialogue and conversation in our country about immigration and about how some people see it as a negative thing. And I find that really, really confusing, because when have we ever not been a country of immigrants, and when have we ever not benefited immensely from the energy and the enterprise and the culture that our immigrants, you know, bring to this country? And what a boring place this would be if we didn't have all these amazing streams of different kinds of music and different kinds of storytelling and different kinds of food all mixing together, and you know, and then different new forms coming out of that. You know, I mean, that's part of why America is such a huge cultural influence on the rest of the world. So to me, it's just completely dismaying why anyone would think that that's a bad thing for people to immigrate here from other countries. So I wanted to write a song that was really celebrating someone who had made that journey. And, you know, there were, as you mentioned, there were these instrumental passages in the song after we had laid everything down and recorded everything. And I just kept hearing somebody speaking in those places. And, you know, and I thought, well, it could be me, but wouldn't it be better if I sort of turned the mic over to someone who's actually lived this story and lived this immigrant journey? And that's, I was able to get in touch with Anna Maria through this organization called Raices, that is helping people at the southern border, helping them navigate this crazy, inhumane system that they have in place down there. And so they connected me with her, and she was willing to talk to me about her story. And that's what you hear is the spoken word Spanish on the record, is her talking about coming from Mexico when she was a little girl, having to leave her grandmother and her cousins and the teacher that she loved at school and everyone that she... everything that she knew to come to this place. And her father had been kidnapped. And even though he was returned, you know, they never felt safe again, and they felt like they had to leave. So it was, you know, we talked about it for a long time, and that's a very condensed version of the conversation that we had that's on the record. It was a very emotional conversation.
What I appreciate most about your writing is that you've never shied away from socio-political issues. Going back, you know, to the first hit, I mean, about religion and about God and about all of that. I mean, it's funny that there are some people who still remember you from that, because it was such a monster hit. You've never shied away. Like, no matter what, you are going to be true to some of the things that you want to express. And this album definitely does a lot of that. Like, there are songs on this album that, you know, boy, don't you know about empowering women to be stronger and to be bolder, and you know, Hands Off, which is all about the visceral reaction to corruption and all of those sorts of things. I mean, you don't shy away from things that you're feeling at all, much like Dylan, I guess, much like some of the greater, better songwriters. Is that important? Is it important for you to sort of be genuine and authentic in your writing and write about things that you actually care about and are, to a certain degree, worried about?
Well, I mean, of course it is. You know, of course it's important to have an authentic voice as a writer and as a singer, because otherwise, you know, what are you, you're just shucking and jiving and, you know, maybe you can entertain people or something, but I think that's really relatively hollow when you compare it to what you could be doing with your platform and with your time and your life. You know, if you're giving your life to something, it's got to have meaning. So, so yeah, of course that's important. For me in particular, this record is actually probably the most political thing that I've ever written. And I feel like, you know, as a citizen, I feel like I need to step up and do my part in this all hands on deck moment to try to, you know, help right the ship of democracy as it, as it lists around in this terrible storm, you know. So I feel like I need to do that in order to feel good about myself and feel like I'm contributing in this moment. But I'm also not just a citizen. I'm also an artist, and I've got this platform that I can use to, you know, express my views and also to make music that I think is going to be uplifting, because I think that's very important. You know, in a time that's so turbulent, it can be very easy to feel isolated and to feel worried and to feel discouraged. And, you know, those are all very natural things to feel in a moment like this, but you really don't have the luxury of letting that take you over. So music can be a great tool in a moment like this to allow us to stay connected to this sense of energy and this sense of purpose and this sense of optimism, because that's very important. We need to be able to renew ourselves to get back to work and do the work that needs to be done.
How many of these songs, I'm curious, and maybe all of them were written pre-COVID? Because That Was a Lie is very poignant given all of the misinformation that the president of the United States has delivered, that people on social media have delivered, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Was that pre-COVID? I mean, there's a lot of soothsaying going on because people are so upset with the president that things just kind of fall into line during COVID time and sort of it's the apex of the crisis, right?
Yeah, I mean, these were all written pre-COVID, and they're actually not really about any specific incident,
right.
But they're about, you know, that song in particular, That Was a Lie, is really just my response to turning on the television and seeing these like made up, suited, slicked up, airbrushed people standing in front of podiums and just straight up lying to everyone and to me. I take it personally. You know, my tax dollars go to pay that person's salary and they are lying to my face, you know, and that really upsets me. And it's just, and yet people, you know, when the news media covers these kind of, you know, these moments, they talk about, oh, that was a misstatement, or, oh, that was, you know, something that was an alternative fact or whatever it was. And, you know, I'm like, no, that's not what that was at all.
Right.
That was not unintentional. That was a lie. And I think it's really dangerous to let those things go without calling them what they are. So it's, you know, it's not about COVID, but it's about this, you know, this tendency that, well, I don't know if it's a tendency. I think it's a very deliberate tactic that is being used by people who are abusing their power to cover up that abuse and to try to hide it by lying to us.
Right. Agreed. One of my favorite songs on the record is Never Get Tired of Loving You. I don't know. Well, it's definitely the vocal performance, but also it has that 70s riff, AM Gold feel to it. And I love, like, I'm a sucker for, like, I have a playlist of, it's called Yacht Rock, which is a big thing now, right? But it's all that Ambrosia and 10cc and all of the,
oh, I love 10cc.
Yeah, all of those, like, AM Gold bands that had one or two big hits just before I was born. but just keep coming up in my head all the time. They're stuck with me. I don't know why. And Never Get Tired has that riff, right? That 70s riff. I don't know if it's the synthesizer or just the whole...
It is, yeah.
It's the whole sway of the record. The melody too, right? Like the melody too is very classic 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that really was what I was going for. You know, I'm a huge fan of groups like the Spinners and the Shy Lights and you know, that sort of 70s era soul pop stuff with like the vocal groups and the layered harmonies and the beautiful, you know, cool synth parts and stuff. So I really was wanting it to feel like that. And I'm so glad that you got that from it. And you know, it, to me, that song is, it's about really, you know, understanding that you can see all the things that are going on and that are going wrong. You know, like, you know, the truth is turning into fiction and, you know, the devil has climbed up to heaven and the birds are falling out of the sky. And there's so many things that are going wrong and so many disasters that are either here or on their way. But you know, you can see that, but then you can also tell someone that you care about that it doesn't matter what any of that stuff is, I'm still going to be here for you.
That same sort of sentiment, I think, comes through in Take It Any Way That I Can Get It, in that being hopeful of your life and living life to your fullest and living life in the moment, even though all this crap is going on around us, take it any way that I can get it is really about living a fulfilled life, no matter what the constraints are, right?
Yeah, no matter what kind of, you know, obstacles are thrown in your way, you can still make your way. And you can still have that energy and that joy. And, you know, you see it in these communities, like, you know, it, communities of color that are facing these enormous obstacles about, you know, their vote is being taken away from them. And they're, you know, suffering violence at the hands of the police. And there's economic violence that has been done to them for generations. And yet they have found ways to find their joy and to live in joy. And, you know, I remember I was on a plane with the guys in the Temptations. I was in Australia and I was on a tour with a bunch of different Motown bands and, you know, like the actual Motown artists. And the guys in the Temptations were sitting behind me on the plane and you know, somebody came up to say hi to one of them and they had a conversation. It was like, how you doing and what's going on and what about this health crisis that you're having? And he was like, you know what? I'm not going to let it take away my joy. Right. And I was just like, wow, you know, I let all kinds of things take away my joy. That's ridiculous. I need to hang on to that. I need that, right. You know, and that's just stayed in my mind, you know, since that day. What a great thing to say. I'm not going to let it take away my joy.
It's so interesting to me that you mention being on a bill with Motown people, which, you know, obviously speaks to your love of that era of music. A lot of people that will listen to this podcast, because we are sort of geared to the jam band community, will recognize your work with members of the Grateful Dead and the tours that you did with them, which were amazing. You are an artist at this point. You're not just a musician. Like, you have like a lot of genre bending going on before it was cool to be a genre bender, whether it's Dylan or Motown or everything else. I mean, is that just because you have such eclectic taste and because you care so much about the music that's been part of your life that it comes through kind of in this eclectic kind of way?
I mean, I don't think I've had any sort of overarching plan about it. It's really just been, if people have invited me to do something and I thought it was a cool thing to do, I would say yes. Right. And I've been super fortunate to have, you know, enough of a name or a notoriety or whatever that people know about me, that
I think it's talent, by the way. I don't think it's name. You know? I think it's talent, by the way.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you. It's nice to be welcomed into so many of these different worlds. And, you know, probably, you know, the reason that I have a certain amount of facility with, you know, going from like the Dead to Motown to working with the Waybacks at, you know, Merlefest or whatever it is because I really learned a lot on the New York club scene about American roots music, about blues music, about R&B music, about music that made you want to dance, and could see artists like Chris Whitley and could see artists like Jeff Buckley right up close, people who were taking those traditions of folk music and blues music and weaving something new out of them. So, you know, that was a real education, and that's been my only musical education, was being on that scene at that time.
Yeah, because that scene was so, you know, it is the beginning of the next wave of whatever the Grateful Dead did or these genre bending type of bands. I mean, when you have the Spin Doctors with their sound and Blues Traveler with their sound and your sound, and you know, we mentioned John O'Manson off the top and what he was doing, and he was even exploring all of these different things. And it was just an exciting time, I guess, to be in the Village and listening to all of these bands play, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, there was a great live music scene where you could go to 15 clubs in one night in this very sort of small geographical area. You could just walk from one to the next and see what was happening and see what was going on. And, you know, maybe if you knew somebody, you'd go up and sit in with them for a couple of songs, and then you'd say goodbye and you'd go across the street and you'd hear some other thing. So it was, you know, people talk about 52nd Street in the jazz era, and you know, I wouldn't say that it's the equal, but for me it was sort of like my 52nd Street, is that I had this great compact little world that I could wander around in and learn all this stuff and soak it all up.
It's been 25 years of soaking this stuff up. I mean, from the beginning till now, and I'm not here to suggest that it's even close to over, but have there been significant highlights aside from, you know, awards and stuff, which is great and certainly deserving? Have there been specific events during this 25 years that you're most proud of from a career perspective? Not being a mom, obviously, that's a huge, huge thing. But from a career perspective, what have been some of the highlights thus far?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I could certainly talk about, you know, some people that I lionize and that I admire so much, and being able to, you know, work with them and sing with them, you know, being able to duet with Bob Dylan, where we were on the same microphone and his face was like, you know, inches away from my face, and or being able to sing with Stevie Wonder at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction of Gladys Knight and the Pips, right. You know, like being able to sing with Luciano Pavarotti, sitting in with Patti Smith, you know, these are definitely highlight moments for me, because it's, you know, to feel like I am accepted by somebody like that, you know, to be able to make music with them, even in just that moment, it's so gratifying and it's so exciting, and it just feels so good, you know, to sing with Stevie Wonder. Oh my God,
right.
You know, it just felt so good. But, you know, I also have to say that there are moments of, you know, sort of transcendence and even ecstasy that you can get to on just an ordinary night of an ordinary gig, where you're in some, you know, you're in some town, you're in Pittsburgh or you're in Cleveland or wherever you are, and you and the band just happen to hit some kind of groove that feels so great, and the audience is right there with you. And, you know, that can be a moment that transcends and that just, you know, gives you this explosion of joy, and there's nobody there to record it, and there's nobody, you know, fancy or special or famous around, but that's just as meaningful. And, you know, to have had so many moments like that consistently over the years, you know, to me, that's the as much of a reward as anyone could look for in their livelihood, you know?
Whole Wide World is this very comforting lullaby that I think everybody needs to, as soon as the record comes out, everybody needs to put on and take a couple minutes out. You sing, "We could see the whole wide world from here, looking past the sorrow and the tears. Let me take you to that better place. Let me put the smile back on your face." I mean, perfect, right? Perfect for these times we're living in right now.
Yeah, you know, it's so easy to feel discouraged in this moment, but we don't have the luxury of getting sidelined by that. And I think that, you know, it's not that you don't understand that there's a lot of work to be done. There is a lot of work to be done. But if you can envision that better day and that that writer place, then it's going to make it easier to manifest that, and it's going to make it easier to do that work. And to me, that's what that song is for. It's about allowing us to take that idea into our minds and into our hearts in order to make it easier to make it a reality.
I can't thank you enough for the career to this point, for a really important record. And let's not wait 6 more years till there's more original material. I understand there are very cool projects like Trigger Hippie and Bob Dylan getting in the way, but Joan, you have an incredible voice. And I don't mean that just your singing voice. I mean what you have to say, and people need to hear that. I think people don't hear that enough from people who are so well established. So thank you for taking the time. Thank you for making a great record. And we truly can't wait to see what's next for you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Joan was extremely gracious with her time and positively on point with her message. Trouble and Strife is a particularly timely record, one I highly recommend you listen to once it's out September 18th. For more, visit joanosborne.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Trouble and Strife. Here is Boy, Don't You Know.
Never.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.